talking on all political subjects and taking on all callers, this is Matt Flynn Direct with your host, Matt Flynn.
Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. Second hour, coming to you in Madison on Devil Radio 92.7 FM and WTTN 1580 AM. And in Waukesha on the Shaw, 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM. No subject is off limits and all points of view are welcome. And remember, you're not woke if you don't know history. You're not woke unless and until you know history. Going right back to the front lines of history in the making, and we're going to the lines themselves. Mark from the SAC, my friend, thanks for calling. What's in your mind? Mark from the SAC.
Yeah, I think that what we're witnessing is people that they want to reject the Enlightenment, as indeed a lot of the people in the in the South did prior to the Civil War. They don't care about the separation of church and state. They don't think it really exists. They think that's just, they think that is just a false premise, because these guys want to reject the Enlightenment. I mean They don't believe that all men are created equal. They think that women are inferior and should be subservient to men. I mean, that is just, including some of these women, I mean, that they think that they are the handmaidens of the handmaidens and the vessels, and that's what we're dealing with now. I think that with Amy Coney Barrett, I think that's her position, and for Brett Kavanaugh, I wouldn't trust him as far as I could throw him, which is a lot. Shorter distance now than it was when I was a younger man.
He hasn't missed many meals either. I mean, the guy weighs a few pounds. But no, I hear what you're saying, Mark. You're raising a good point. The Enlightenment. For those remember something. Europe convulsed in warfare internally all through the 1600s. Religious warfare and. And Germany got really bad, and they had these princes. Now you think of Germany. Well, for a while it was Bavaria and Prussia, and they'd fight each other. And then before that, they were just princes. They're flat out princes that basically ran things, and whatever religion the prince was, you were his religion. People finally started to say, hey, wait a minute. I'm a human being. I'll decide what I want to do. And in the 18th century, the 1700s, you had people like Rousseau and Voltaire and the rest came along, said, wouldn't it be a great thing if, people weren't oppressed and they were equal and we didn't impose religion on folks? And, the Enlightenment, I mean, that's a very shorthanded version. And that was put into effect in our Constitution. Our Constitution is an Enlightenment document. And it provides in the First Amendment, remember, of these amendments, the first 10 are the Bill of Rights. The first one, for good reason, is no established religion, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, freedom of the right to petition the government, freedom of the press. It's incredible. If you put that on a ballot now, it wouldn't get, it might not pass in some states. Really, it might not pass in some states. Those people were geniuses, and thank God they all came together at the same time. So Mark from the SAC is exactly right. This is this court, I think, has gone too far. And by that, I mean, there's an old saying that the Supreme Court keeps one eye on the election returns. They're not stupid. If the entire country says, get out of here, they're toast. They have no army. And so this is one where they are pandering to a, in my view, a political minority. And I think you are going to see the effect of this in the Wisconsin governor race. I think that that Evers will handily beat any Republican, simply because people are going to say, "No, we don't want this kind of this thing rammed down our throat." I think you are going to see it in effect in the Senate and House races around the country, even the gerrymandered House races, and in the Senate races in all states. You can't gerrymander a Senate seat because it's a statewide. But this is going to have political implications. And if I'm correct, and we spent an hour talking about this, and I'm glad we did, but if I'm correct, there will be concurring opinions. And there won't be five opinions to, or five decisions to overturn Roe v. Wade. There'll be three. It'll be Alito, Clarence Thomas, Amy Comey Barrett, maybe Gorsuch. Then there will be three liberals, Democrats, who don't want to do anything. And then there will be two, which I think are going to be Roberts and Kavanaugh, who give a very narrow concurring opinion saying, we concur with the majority insofar as they're upholding the Mississippi law. Mississippi law doesn't interfere with abortions at all in the first trimester. That's what Roe v. Wade says. That's what Roe v. Wade says. And but we don't concur in the rest of it. Now, the thing that's important is, will they have the decency to put in that, and even in the second and third trimesters, if the life or health of the woman is threatened, the state may not interfere with a medical decision on that. If they put that in, I mean, there aren't a lot of abortions in the third trimester that are done for the heck of it. You know, I mean, this frequently is because almost always because of the life or health of the woman. And so this may be not as apocalyptic as we think, but I don't have a crystal ball, but I'm telling you, as having, I didn't clerk for the Supreme Court, but I clerked for the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit in Chicago. Judge Thomas Fairchild, the chief judge at the time, great judge. I learned a lot and drafted opinions for him. He decided the case and said, I want it to turn out this way, and I draft the opinion. And I'll tell you what, I think there's a very real possibility there'll be concurring opinions here. And there's no doubt in my mind that this draft is authentic, that it got leaked. There are 9 Supreme Court justices and they each have 4 clerks. There are 36 people that saw this. And these are people right out of law school. Maybe they clerk for another lower court judge for a year or two. And some of them may think, all right, I'm going to put some pressure on folks and release it. I don't know if there's any criminal prohibition on that. Certainly they'll get in trouble if they get sniffed out. But Politico may be deposed. They could have a grand jury talk to them. They may say reporter privilege. I litigated a lot of that for WSN TV and radio in my legal career. Reporters do have a privilege. There's going to be some fascinating legal ramifications of this, but the bottom line is it's going to have a tremendous impact on the November elections and the 2024 elections. We're going to go on because we could speak about this for yet another hour, but the lines are open, 844-967-2789. I leave it to people to call in to express your opinion, pose a question. I'd love to respond. But I'm going to turn now to the Republican governor primary in Wisconsin. And there's a big oops, oops, oops for Tim Michaels. Oops. You may remember there was a guy named Sean Duffy. He was the congressman from Hayward. And he left the Congress because his wife, and I admire him for doing this, even though I disagree with him on a lot of issues. His wife had a very difficult birth and the child with special needs, and he decided he was going to stay home with his family. And I admire him for that. In any event, his wife now is a commentator for Fox News out of New York. So they moved to New Jersey. And Trump said, well, move back and run for governor. I'll support you. And he thought about it. But he goes, well, you know, I live in New Jersey. That's kind of weird, even though I was a congressman. Well, it turns out that Tim Michaels lives in Connecticut and in New York City. Oops. Here's the deal. He has a family construction business. And I got to say, at the very beginning, I thought that Michaels was an intriguing candidacy because I looked on him more like I looked on Tommy Thompson, who was basically a moderate straight shooter. You might not agree with him on everything, but basically he's not going to, you know, permit the Republican Party to overturn a presidential election or transfer the selection of electors to the legislature and all that kind of stuff. I thought Michaels was the same. Maybe he is, except that that's not how he's campaigning. His initial ads just are absolutely flat out, much more in the line of Rebecca Clayfish, the Duchess of Foxconn. And he apparently said it's something that those anti-voting laws that Evers vetoed, voter repression, that what he would do is he would have signed them. Well, you know, and then he's no different from the Duchess of Foxconn. Anyway, he owns a $17 million home in, near Greenwich, Connecticut, an $8.7 million condo in Manhattan. One of his children graduated from high school. They live there in Connecticut, and the other one graduated from high school in New York, and these are not boarding schools. And he lived in these properties from 2015 to 2020. Now he's back sniffing around to be governor. Here's the deal. He says, I live 183 days a year in Wisconsin. Well, okay, I live 365 days in Wisconsin, except when I'm on vacation, except when I go to Florida for a week. Lucky to get away for a week or two. Then they ask him, where's he living now? Swear to God. His spokesman says, I'll check out that and get back to you. Hey, you know, nobody ever said to me, where's Matt living now? Well, I'll check on that. He said, Wyoming, for God's sake. I mean, you know, so come on, guy. Come on, guy. Okay. So the problem is for Michaels, he might be better than the Duchess of Foxconn, but I don't know it because he's been campaigning like the Duchess. And he, you know, apparently he's a Connecticut guy or $17 million. That's a hell of a house. It only has four bedrooms. Does have five bathrooms. Nothing in Milwaukee like that. Pay a little extra. Pay a little extra. Going to break. Lines are open. 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.
Midnight Rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. Well, development in the Senate race in Wisconsin. Big article in the paper, Ron Johnson says he, quote, favors a free market system for health care, end quote. Okay, what do you think that means? Doesn't sound good. Doesn't sound good. Tell you what it means. It means no Affordable Health Care Act, no Obamacare. He's opposed it and voted to repeal it several times. And now what he goes, I'm going to make it better. I'm going to make it better. You know, in 1935, Franklin Roosevelt proposed a Social Security Act. All the Republicans said, no, it's socialism and all this kind of stuff, even though people were paying into it. And then when they ran against Roosevelt in 36 and 40 and 44, they all said, we're not opposed to Social Security anymore. We want to make it better. We want to make it better. And Roosevelt was great. He said, sure, the people that tried to kill it now say they're going to make it better. Sure they are. Sure they are. Well, here's what's happening with Johnson. He also does not believe in Medicare or Medicaid. And here's his proposal, and you can decide what you think about it. I don't think very much of it at all. For Medicare, when you turn 65, you get Medicare. And if you're smart, you'll buy a supplement of some sort to pay for anything Medicare doesn't. But Medicare pays for an awful lot of stuff, and Medicare is very good at controlling costs and cutting the fat out from doctors and hospitals. What Johnson is proposing and what Republicans going back even to George W. Bush propose is we're going to get rid of Medicare and we're going to give everybody over 65 vouchers. They're going to voucherize Medicare, and your voucher will be what any amount the Congress says from year to year, and they'll keep whittling it down. But let's say the voucher is worth $5,000 or $10,000. You can go out on the marketplace of insurance companies and buy a medical policy. How much do you think of a policy you're going to get for $5,000 or $10,000? Especially as you get older, and especially some of these will have no pre-existing condition clauses. And if you need expensive surgeries, it can be hundreds of thousands. So you're not going to get much. It'll be a very high deductible. And the other thing, if you've ever dealt with an insurance company and you're not a lawyer, you're out of luck. the insurance company will say, wait a minute, you didn't read page 17. Page 17 says that if it's related at all to cancer, you're not covered. Or if it's related at all to this or that, you're not covered. Then you'll have to go to legal aid, unless you can afford a lawyer. They're overwhelmed. They'll try to sue the insurance company. If it went to the Wisconsin Supreme Court, you'd lose, the Republican Supreme Court. Let's not voucherize Medicare. Let's leave it the way it is. That's my feeling. Because the truth of the matter is that when you need medical care as you get older, before Medicare and before Medicaid for very poor people that had no health insurance, you'd flat out die. And you'd die a lot sooner. And here's the other thing that really is a terrible thing. There are certain kinds of checkups. You should go in for a yearly checkup. They can catch breast cancer early. They can catch prostate cancer early. And if they do, it's possible to take care of it. But you're going to have women who are not going to go in for any checkups at all under this system. The medical plans that they would be able to buy under something like a voucher will be pretty sparse, and they may not provide checkups, and some people can't afford them, won't get them. And then when you develop breast cancer and it's spread, it's too late. Frequently anyway, it's too late. This is just a flat out bad idea. It's a flat out bad idea. And you know, there is a Medicare and a Social Security amount you pay in your income, you pay into it. And the good thing, back in the Reagan era, he and Tip O'Neill, the Democratic Speaker of the House, sat down and they negotiated something. Reagan was a Republican president. Tip O'Neill was the very popular speaker from Boston, Massachusetts. And they took the income limit off of how much you had to pay for Medicare. So right now, there is a limit on how much you have to pay for Social Security. I think it's over $100,000, but I don't know if it's 110, 20, 30, somewhere in there. But if you're Bill Gates or you're Warren Buffett or Jeff Bezos, you're not paying anything over that for your own Medicare. I mean, for Social Security. For Medicare, they took that limit off. And Medicare is basically sound. What Johnson wants to do is take money savings from that by voucherizing it and putting it in for high-end tax cuts. That's what he wants to do. And on the Affordable Care Act, I've never understood, although I think I'm beginning to, why Johnson and some of these Republicans were just in a frenzy to repeal it. Now, this may not be their motivation, but subconsciously, they must think that it's going to bump off some poor people who don't vote for them. I mean, if you think about it, the kinds of people that go on affordable health care and need subsidies, not everybody needs a subsidy, they think are not in their voting demographic. And they are simply sticking a knife to them. Now, this guy's going into an election, a Senate election, saying that he, quote, favors a free market system for healthcare, end quote. That is code for making Medicare a voucher system. You're given a fairly small amount, and you're going to go on what? A market? And you're going to go what? You're going to buy a policy that's 50 pages long? You're not going to read it. You know you're not going to read it. Then you're going to get sick. One of their bean counters will say, page 17, it's excluded or it's limited or blah, blah, blah. Or we get to pick your doctor. You can't have your doctor. And you're going to get Dr. Schmidtlop up in Ladysmith, and here's a bus ticket to go see him. So, I mean, this is the kind of stuff. It's the kind of stuff. And then they're going to go on the Affordable Care Act. We'll make it better. They never say they'll get rid of it. When they're going to get rid of it, they say, we'll make it better. First, we'll get rid of it. And they were going to come up with something. And you ask them, all right, what are you going to come up with? Show us the draft. Well, we're working on it. And he's going into a Senate election asking everybody to reelect him. Now, there's a lot of other things you can say. He's pro-Putin, pro-Russia. He went to Russia on July 4th, 2018 to meet with some folks. We still don't know who all they were and what he talked about. They wanted to humiliate the United States by having some senators come over there on our Independence Day to go to the country that's run by the Russian mafia. He blasted our CIA and FBI, said he doesn't trust them. And he did it when he was the chairman of the Subcommittee on Homeland Security when the Republicans had the Senate. So he trusts Trump. Trump trusts Putin. Trump trusts the FSB, which is the successor to the KGB. They changed the initials because they had such a bad reputation. Now they have a worse reputation. You don't want a pro-Russian guy who's going to get rid of Medicare and the Affordable Care Act. You flat out don't. That's not Wisconsin. We're going to a break. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. We're going to go to Ohio. There's a Senate primary today in the Republican Party. Why do I even mention it? Because everybody is making this out to be a litmus test on the power of a Trump endorsement. There will be primaries almost every week between now and well into June. And of course, ours is in August. Between now and September, there'll be a lot of primaries in the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, but in the Republican Party where Trump has made an endorsement and people are going to try to read tea leaves on how effective the guy was, okay? Well, to quote Jon Stewart, remember Jon Stewart? He's a great comedian. Jon Stewart, he calls it the banana peel in the coal mine. The banana peel in the coal mine. Well, I think that overstates it, but here is the lineup. Here's what I think is going to happen, and here's my prediction, and it's going to be real easy to test it out because the polls close tonight in the evening, and we'll know by tomorrow morning. There's a guy named Josh Mandel, who was the state treasurer, and he'd been the leader for a while in the polls. And he's a submissive, subservient Trump guy, licked Trump's boots. You know, in a debate with an older guy who said something he didn't like, he goes over and gets in his face and has to be separated. He's kind of an angry guy. Then there's a guy named J.D. Vance. He wrote a book called Hillbilly Elegy, and he spent years attacking Trump and insulting him. In fact, saying worse things about Trump than you hear on this station, which is amazing. Then there is a guy named Mike Gibbons, who's a very wealthy investor. Then a woman named Jane Timken. Jane Timken was the chairwoman of the Republican Party and is endorsed by Portman, the outgoing Republican senator. There's a guy named Matt Dolan, who's a state senator. Well, Trump comes in and he looks at this dog's breakfast of candidates and he goes, all right, I'll just pick one of them, endorse him. That'll help him win. And then I'll look like a big shot. So he endorses J.D. Vance. Well, J.D. Vance is a guy who insulted him and was a Democrat until he decided he wanted to be in office. And then he ran as a Republican, sort of a Kevin Nicholson kind of guy in our Republican primary who is a Democrat. Was the president of the Young Democrats of America and spoke at the Democratic National Nominating Convention, blasting Republicans, came back to Wisconsin, realized I'm not going to get elected in the identity politics Democratic Party, not going to get a nomination, so I'll go Republican and start saying the same nasty things about Democrats. Same kind of guy. But because he was famous, he wrote this book. I've looked at the book. I'm not impressed with his writing, but in any event, So suddenly he shoots up in the polls and he's number one, about 3% of the vote. Mandel falls at 19%. Gibbons falls. Timken's down around 4%. Nobody's looking for like a Portman, Jeb Bush Republican anymore. But Dolan is an interesting guy. State senator, doesn't have a ton of money. But in all the debates, he's the only guy that stands up to Trump. And they all go, how many of you think Trump should get out of the Republican Party? Or, not that. How many of you think the Republican Party shouldn't continue to follow Trump? They should move on from the 2020 election, go to other issues. All the rest of them go, no, no, we want Trump. Dolan said, no, I don't want him dominating the party anymore. We got to move on and so forth. And he's going up. So in the last one, he got up to 20% in number two position. Okay. How do I read this? First of all, you can't look on this in John Stewart's great phrase, the banana peel in the coal mine. In other words, slipping on the banana peel or the canary in the coal mine. So one primary, there are a lot of particular local issues in Ohio. There are matters of personality, who do people like, blah, 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 blah. But I'm going to make this prediction, and you'll know whether I'm right or wrong, probably at 8:01 tonight. Maybe they're in Eastern time. Maybe you'll know it's 7:01 tonight. I don't know. Anyway, Matt Dolan may do better than people think, because he's standing up to Trump. The rest of them are sucking up to Trump mercilessly, licking his boots. Matt Dolan doesn't insult them. Matt Dolan says, look, that's ancient history. That's that, you know, we're not going to go relitigate the 2020 election. We're going to go forward. And he looks like he has a head on his shoulders. The question is, if he doesn't win this thing in an upset, will Vance or Mandel win it? The truth of the matter is, Vance, I don't think that Trump's endorsement will do it for Vance, except that Mandel comes across kind of harsh. If he came across a little more friendly looking and didn't go up to an older candidate, and he's taller than the candidate, and sort of almost bumped chest with him to menace him, I think Mandel would have knocked him off. I think Mandel and Vance will be very close. So will Dolan. And it's like Arlington Racetrack, three horses, you know, nose apart, coming in the final stretch. I'm going to take a flyer. I'm going to say that Mac Dolan pulls it out by a nose, by a whisker. And then Vance and Mandel come in close seconds and thirds. But in any event, what Trump did was anger the Republican Party there for going with Vance, because they don't like him because he attacked Republicans. Trump is a agent of discord, and it's frankly time we got him out of our politics. Going to the lines, Joe of Madison, my friend. Thanks for calling, Joe. What's in your mind?
Hi, Matt. I wanted to return to the issue of Medicare, which you focused on just before the break, and just wanted to indicate to people, run for the hills when somebody's offering you a voucher instead of a program that has been time-tested and works. It used to be that the elderly were the most impoverished portion of our society, but Social Security and Medicare have changed that. And the only wishes I would have is that the original plan for Medicare was, some had said that they would be trying to reduce it every year, or every 10 years they would try to get more and more people covered under Medicare, so that instead of 65, it would be 55 and 45, and boy, we would be in a lot better shape. I would encourage people who are younger, who we think that Medicare is something that, you know, way in the future, and a voucher will be great, and this will be really wonderful, to just think about their own families now. Think about their parents and what's going to happen if mom and dad get a voucher instead of the wonderful, strong program that we have now. People aren't running away from Medicare who are receiving it. They may have some concerns here or there about things, but boy, they appreciate what they have, and I would encourage those people who are younger to look at this and think, ma'am, how are you going to make up the difference if that voucher doesn't cover this thing, that thing? Who pays for that? You know, your folks are not working at that point, so it's gonna fall on the families to take care of their folks. And we all know what the cost of medicine is. It's huge, and man, that's a pocket of money that will be disappearing fast. Someone says voucher, run the other way.
Joe, that is really just very, very well put. And it's very, very true. And I just want to build on it briefly because it deserves further comment. When Roosevelt was elected in 1932, elderly people were absolutely impoverished. There's no Social Security, no Medicare, and there was no electricity in a lot of rural America. He put in rural electrification, Social Security, and then Medicare came in way after that. But even Social Security, people were brought out of poverty, and the Republican Party attacked him. They attacked him, and they said he's a socialist and all this kind of thing. But you had a big part of the country that lived in absolute poverty, and most of them were many of them were elderly. When Lyndon Johnson came along in the 60s and we put in Medicare and then Medicaid, everybody attacked the Democratic Party. But nowadays, anybody out there who thinks, okay, a voucher is fine, Joe's exactly right. No, a voucher is not fine, because the Republicans will set the voucher. You get a voucher for $8,000 or something, and then you go out and every insurance company will go, I'll do it for $8,000. I'll do it for $8,000. But they're not like Medicare. And they will have long contracts with many exceptions. Some will have, they bar anything on a pre-existing condition that occurs within a year of your taking the policy, 2 years. Your parents, you know, and you yourself, when you turn 65, everybody thinks that they, you know, they're going to have good health forever. No, you're not going to have good health forever. And, you're going to have to go to a hospital and they'll say, I'm sorry. And it's wrong to tamper with this, because Reagan and Tip O'Neill came up with a great solution to take the income limit off of the Medicare assessment. And so there's money in Medicare, and it's not going anywhere near bankrupt anytime soon. And by the way, neither is Social Security, because back when George W. Bush was president and when Johnson first came in, they also want to change Social Security to privatize it. They'll say, we want to make it better. Just like the Republicans said to Roosevelt, he said, sure they do. They tried to kill it. They want to make it better now. And by privatizing it, they would make you buy into some mutual funds that would be administered by Morgan Stanley and Goldman Sachs and all this. They'll get a 2% fee. They'll short stocks. They'll buy derivatives. Stay out of it. Take your Social Security check. Take your Medicare. Do not vote yourself voluntarily into peasantry. Okay? Thanks, Joe. Okay, Wisco Paul, my friend. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind today, Wisco Paul?
Good morning, Matt. Thanks for taking my call. A lot to talk about today. First of all, I'd like to thank Joe for calling in. She's always so eloquent, and I just enjoy listening to her. I've met her. She's just a cool, cool lady. Keep calling in, Joe. Awesome comments. A little bit about Roe v. The Supreme Court, I have a couple daughters, and they're not real happy about it. I'm not going to go any further than that, except for I would say that if you can turn that over, I guess you could turn anything over. Right now, Matt, there's not a Republican in this state I would vote for. It's became too radical. And you really only have to look any further than the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Three people on the Supreme Court of Wisconsin voted to overturn an election, a fair, free an election. And really, that's all you need to know about the Republican Party. And I'm not going to get all wound up on what's going on nationally. But anyway, thanks for your radio
station,
Paul. Man.
Thank you very much. I'll respond after the break. Very wise comments. The lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Another one bites the dust. Hey!
I find your lack of Devil Radio 92.7 disturbing. Do not fail me again.
Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. Now, Wisco Paul has some very good things to say, and it was really a very profound statement when he said, I wouldn't vote for any Republican. They've gotten too radical. When a party becomes that radical, people of goodwill, even people who are principled conservatives, get alarmed. You don't want people who are, in effect, intellectual bomb throwers. You want reasoned discourse, and you're not going to get it with the Republicans. There is a fascinating thing happened in the January 6th committee. They have sent letters to Andy Biggs of Arizona, Mo Brooks of Alabama, and Ronnie Jackson, former medical guy for Trump, now in Congress in Texas, asking them to give testimony, and they all blew it off with varying degrees of vulgarity. But the letters that were sent to them are fascinating. The letters showed that each of them had begged Trump for a pardon. And so these letters go, well, because you begged Trump for a pardon, which he didn't give you, and the subtext, which was not in the letter, was most folks don't ask for pardon unless they're afraid of being prosecuted. Like, think about that. When was the last time you, who are listening right now, called up Evers' office and said, I'd like a pardon. I didn't do anything. Nobody here but us chickens, boss. I didn't do anything. But by the way, I'd like a pardon. Guy says, I want a pardon. Guy's worried. He's worried about something. And if a guy is in Congress and wants a pardon, that's because they were in on the planning of the insurrection. They committed a felony. That felony is sedition, overthrowing the government, and more importantly, interfering with the duties of Congress, in this case, just to receive ceremonially the electoral votes. That's a felony, interfering with Congress. They delayed the certification of the votes. They did. They delayed it because they erected a gallows, said, hang Mike Pence, roamed through the halls looking to, they would have killed them. They would have killed Nancy Pelosi. Lauren Boebert went out, texted out her location, said, she has left the main chamber, i.e. guys, if you want to kill her, don't go to the main chamber, maybe go to her secret office, which I showed you on that private tour the other day. You know, look, the Secret Service took Pence and Nancy Pelosi and Kevin McCarthy, the three, the minority leader, the speaker, and the vice president, to a secure location with guys with submachine guns sitting behind the door. And Andy Biggs, Mo Brooks, and Ronnie Jackson ask Trump for pardon, and then they go, well, it was just in the ordinary course of business. No, I don't think so. I don't think it was in the ordinary course of business. We're going to the lines. Diallo Madison, thanks for calling. Diallo, what's on your mind today?
Hi. Yeah, a couple of things. When it comes to these Republicans, I think they have shredded, gone beyond every single threshold of decency, of honesty, of, you know, just being a human being. They blew it all out. I don't even know where we are now. So my second point is California last Saturday ran on 100% renewable energy, most of it solar. I think that's a very big milestone that we can't let go by without, you know, addressing it, talking about it. It's a good news, very good news.
Thanks for calling in, Diallo. Yeah, two things. One, you're right. I mean, at one point, and I also think that when one party goes so off the rails, people know that. They intuit it. And some Republicans will still vote for them. But I think that what they're doing right now, and they're continuing to do, and this evidence that's coming out of the January 6th commission, there's going to be a broad mass of independents and a broad mass of moderate, even moderate to conservative Republicans who think we've got to right the ship here. Otherwise, it's tipping over. It's listening. And I think that's right. And then as far as renewable energy, one of the very odd after effects of Russia's invasion of Ukraine and a lot of the geopolitics that's happening in the Middle East and everything else is that people are beginning to realize that if they have to depend on, say, Russia for natural gas and oil, Russia is essentially becoming a Nazi state. And what they are doing, for instance, in Ukraine, you know, they've kidnapped a million or deported a million Ukrainians, and they're sorting out the leaders, politicians, priests and nuns, journalists, you know, intellectuals, professors, and shipping them off to the gulag or killing them. But a lot of these Russian troops are torturing the Ukrainians. Here's what they're doing. They will, it's very cold there. It's way below freezing. They fill their boots with water and make them lie down, and they get frostbite. Then they beat them. They force them to sing Russian patriotic songs, perform for the troops who jeer at them, force them to sign documents that they were well treated, and then they amputate some of their limbs for frostbite, toes, fingers, in some cases, hands and feet. And then these are the ones they send back to Ukraine. The Russians are Nazis. There are good Russians. I met some of them when I went to Moscow and St. Petersburg in 1997 with a delegation from the Justice Department to speak to some of their members of their Duma, their prosecutors. There's some very good people. But this is very, very similar to what the Nazis did when they besieged Leningrad, Stalingrad, the way they treated people in Slavic countries. They killed millions of Ukrainians and tortured them. And so for to say, okay, but we have to put up with this to get their oil and gas, baloney. And what we may be doing is driving the world to alternative energy. CJ of Stoughton, you're on the line. What's on your mind today, CJ?
Morning, Matt. Thanks for taking my call. Last night we saw a breach of our Supreme Court and the leak. That person will be looked at as an icon from the Democrat Party. Pretty sad, destroying another institution. You know, what is? When does the Social Security go insolvent, Matt? And do you know how much each American owes right now to the federal government, as the Democrat Party wants to spend us into oblivion?
Well, here's the deal, CJ. When you call late like this, I got to respond. We're coming to the end of the show, 2 minutes. Thanks for calling, although I can't disagree more. First of all, the people who are destroying the Supreme Court are the Supreme Court justices, not their clerks. I was a clerk. The clerks are good people, by and large. They're just law students. The Supreme Court justices, by pulling this kind of stuff, by pulling it. And remember, Amy Comey Barrett was ratified during the lame duck after Ruth Bader Ginsburg died. If she had held out till January, but you can't pick when you die. She should have retired earlier and then let Obama pick somebody, but she didn't. But in any event, so what's going on here is that even if it's a 5-4 decision, although I think there'll be a concurring opinion that's going to lessen some of the impact of this. And we talked about this an awful lot in the show today, but you're going to have somebody who, with a questionable ratification during lame duck by senators who weren't reelected in some cases, 5-4 roughly, deciding something like this for the whole country. The Supreme Court's going to lose its legitimacy by doing this. It's starting to. And it's not the clerks that are betraying the Supreme Court. It's some of the justices who are betraying the Supreme Court. On Social Security, all you have to do, frankly, is extend the base of the revenue. And it's not going bankrupt, by the way. But instead of cutting off at 120 or 30 grand, do like Medicare. And why shouldn't Bill Gates pay a lot more? Why shouldn't Bezos pay a lot more? And Buffett. Okay, I got to go. Great show. Great callers. Thanks for calling. Matt Flynn Direct will be back same time, same place tomorrow. I'm signing off for today.